Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I am a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies. I share frameworks like I'm going to be doing today. I tell stories about things that worked, but also things that were big, epic fails. I interview experts, and all because I truly believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And so we've been talking a lot about how creativity and curiosity are changing because of machine learning. Like, what does it mean for students to have these human skills in an age of smart machines? It's an idea that connects to my book, The AI Roadmap. If you haven't checked it out, please go check that book out. There's a study guide related to the book you can download from my website. You can also join the book study that we're going to have on this book as well. I'm going to be launching that in a couple weeks. But one of the core ideas is that we want students to think well and intentionally and strategically about using AI effectively. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. It's all about this idea of how do we teach students how to engage in what's called prompt engineering. So without further ado, here is today's podcast. Over the last year, I've had the opportunity to work with educators who are incorporating generative AI into their classroom practice. Whether it's working with pre-service teachers at my university and getting a chance to get into some of their classrooms, or it's in working with current teachers in the workshops and professional development that I lead all around the country. And actually, I've gotten a chance to kind of visit the world. It's been really fun. I've just been inspired by the creative ways that teachers are using generative AI for their classroom practice, how they really focus on what does this mean to use this well in student learning. And I'm struck by the intentionality and the creativity inherent in this process, especially at a time when, let's be honest, it is a really hard time to be a teacher right now. But I've noticed a surprising trend as well. Students don't always know how to craft relevant prompts for the chat, AI chatbots, right? So for all the talk of digital natives, they're not AI natives. They don't necessarily know how to create great prompts that they will then use to get better answers from these different chatbots. So I want to share a framework that we can have for doing prompt engineering. And before we get there, I want to share this idea of having a blended approach. So in previous podcast episodes, I've talked about what does it mean to have this human and machine overlap, this blended approach to things like AI writing. You can find it if you go to spencerauthor.com. You can find the particular episode, listen to it. You could also read the article that goes with it. But this blended approach, you can imagine it as a Venn diagram with the human on one side, the machine on the other. And what we're going for is this overlap. So we want it to be human first, human forward. But to use AI wisely and creatively and intentionally along the way. So, you know, what does this look like? Well, a blended approach might include a mix of, say, hands-on, you know, work with, you know, AI-generated coding, right? That's what it might look like in a programming class. In writing, it might be something where you start out with something handwritten, and students create sketch notes. They blend together drawings and texts, and it's very hands-on. And these low-tech options focus on writing as a way of making learning visible. It's a way of making your thinking visible. And students are using these old-school tools because the simplicity of these very tactile tools actually allow them to be a little bit deeper in their thinking and more flexible in their thinking. There are things that you just need to do with your body. But then these same students might use a chatbot to generate new ideas that they hadn't considered, or use an AI-generated response that they then quote and cite as they modify their work. In this sense, what you're doing here is that they're beginning with something human-generated, and then they're adding AI as a tool only when necessary. They might use it to get feedback or help with their writing. So think something like Grammarly, as an example. And that's one approach that they might take. And I love this approach because it really is human-centered, human-forward. But there might be times where students use AI as a starting place for their writing, and then they add their own unique voice to the finished product. This could happen in the same class period. Students use this blended mode, and they shift back and forth between human and artificial intelligence. The way I like to think about it is that what you're doing is you're beginning with something AI-generated that is very vanilla, and they're adding their own unique flavor. They're coming up with new ideas. They're rearranging the text. They are, adding elements of their own voice. They're adding things connected to the context that they know best. And what you're going for here is really that they are taking that vanilla and they're making it their own. One of the quick processes that I've used that I really enjoy for this is the AI-generated text will be done as regular text in, say, black, and then they choose their own color, red, green, whatever it may be. And you get to visually see, when you look at the Google Doc, how much they've modified to make it their own. But the truth is, there's a lot of different ways that students are going to be using AI, and AI chatbots in particular, in school. So again, previous episodes have talked about this for writing, for project management, for ideation and design thinking. What does it look like for all of the phases of a project in PBL? For skill practice, how we create it as a mode for practicing skills, as a form of personalized learning, as a sort of AI tutor, generating scaffolds, which was a really recent episode we had on this podcast, assessment. So all of these different areas are ones where students will be at some point creating the prompts themselves. Now, a lot of these, I want to point out, a lot of the tools are not COPPA and CIPA compliant. If you live in the US, that's a policy that we have to follow. A lot of times things like ChatGPT are going to be blocked by district filters. And so if that's the case, I highly recommend screening the tools that are out there and using ones that are geared toward a K-12 environment. In the past, I interviewed Sal Khan from the Khan Academy. I'm a big fan of Khanmigo. No, I'm not being paid to advertise for it. I'm not pushing this tool as the answer or anything like that. But it is an example of I think, something that is intentional and developmentally appropriate and just really good for the K-12 environment. But the reality is, given that they are going to need to create all these prompts for assessment and scaffolding and project management, all these different things, asking for help and feedback, the truth is students struggle with prompt engineering. So I want you to picture this. I'm standing here in a middle school social studies classroom as students engage in a Wonder Day activity. It's something that I've mentioned on my blog posts. It's something that I've done with my students in my social studies pedagogy course. And so I'm standing there and they're doing this Wonder Day activity, but the teacher that I'm working with, she's decided to integrate ChatGPT into the initial inquiry phase. And here students start with their own question, but they use the chatbot to build background knowledge. Well, this could be really good because it will lead them to deeper background knowledge that will help them as they engage in research. But the problem is students struggle with this. They have a really hard time. One of the things that happens immediately is that their questions are far too vague. They're asking questions about the World War, but they're not even stating World War II, which is what they're learning about in class. They just have a hard time with that sense of clarity and precision needed in prompt engineering. And it can be hard because other students will create something that's so tight and so rigid, it doesn't allow the chatbot to be creative in its response, or it doesn't allow it to elaborate in a more in-depth way. And so some of them are lacking clarity and they're too broad. Some of these prompts are too specific and they're just very factual and they don't leave any room for creative thinking. And so it becomes a problem. As they actually look at the chatbot answers, a lot of them are struggling to come up with follow-up questions. And a lot of them are just taking the answers at face value. They're not engaging in any sort of analysis, any critical thinking about the answers. They're not looking for any factual inaccuracies, any biases, but they're not even doing things like having ChatGPT regenerate the response. And so it was a reminder in this moment as I'm watching this go on that the students are struggling with prompt engineering. And this is actually, you know, a middle school classroom, but I've seen the same thing in a high school level, right? I was in a class with senior government, and these are AP senior government is the class. And students were struggling to come up with really good prompts related to, you know, they were using it to look at U.S. constitutional law and what that looked like in terms of these case studies. So I want to share a process for prompt engineering. And this is an acronym, I'll warn you. I know those of you who are part of the anti-acronym brigade might be rolling your eyes, you might be turning off the podcast, you might be giving me a one-star review, but I do like acronyms. I came up with an acronym for launch, our book launch on design thinking. I'm just a fan of making something memorable as a mnemonic device. So if this isn't relevant for you, if the FACTS acronym doesn't work for you, go make it your own. Change it up. You know, I'm take the vanilla that I'm giving you and make it your own as well. So the following is a 5-step process for prompt engineering. And I did this by talking to artists, engineers, computer scientists, entrepreneurs. I just interviewed a lot of different people in the last year and asked them, how do you use AI for your workflow? I then tested out a more intentional process based on a lot of the different ideas I was seeing with secondary school students locally where I live, right? So I live in Oregon. And I did this with middle school students. I did this with high school students. And then after taking this 5-step process, I reached out to my friend Bill Selleck, who is a deep thinker about all things tech-related. I checked out a really cool webinar from Joe Marquez in California. He's a great deep thinker about AI. And I reshaped my process, which was initially a 7-step process, into something simpler. It's a 5-step process. So I'm going to share this with you right now. Phase 1 is formulate the prompt. In this first phase, students formulate their initial prompt. Often this is written in the form of a question. And, you know, it might be research questions that they're looking at, building background knowledge. It might be questions that they have related to something that they're confused about. And what you can do as a teacher is give them sample questions to look at and sentence frames. If you look at the article that goes with this, I have sentence frames that I created and then also some sentence frames that ChatGPT created related to 19th century imperialism and then related to a coding class. So something very, you know, humanities-based, history-based, and then something that is very STEM-based, a programming class. In this phase, you might need to model the prompt creation process. And this is a great opportunity to sort of engage in this metacognition, right? Where you're thinking about thinking, you're talking through your thinking process, and then you ask students to do the same. You might even create an initial prompt and have students give feedback on how they would modify that prompt. So you say, here's my initial prompt, how would you change it? And you ask them to edit your prompt. The other option is that you can have them look at a set of different prompts and give them the opportunity to use a rubric to judge the prompt. Again, if you go to spencerauthor.com, look at this article that goes with this podcast, I have included in here a rubric that you can use that goes from inadequate to proficient in terms of prompt engineering. I'll also point out that you can download, I have a free download connected to this where it includes this process, the video for you to download and show to your students, a handout to go with it, and of course, the sentence frames that I mentioned, the rubric that I'm showing. So again, it's just kind of something that as a free resource you can go check out if you're interested. So in this first phase, once students have an understanding of what makes a quality prompt, they can then make it their own. It can help to provide students with those samples and sentence frames as a scaffold. Again, most students won't necessarily know what great prompts look like. And so giving them examples and making it explicit and clear and visible will help them access the learning, right? It functions as a necessary scaffold. And then what they can do is they can craft a few prompts, engage in some peer feedback, and ultimately have their final prompt. So that's phase one. Again, it's the F in it. It is formulate the prompt. I want to point out that the more prompt engineering that they do, the simpler this phase will become. They'll get to a point where they will be crafting prompts pretty quickly. The next phase is acquire the AI tool. So formulate the question is F, A is acquire the tool. And students sometimes struggle with the limitations and capabilities of the AI systems that they're using. Unrealistic expectations or assumptions about what the AI can do can lead to anger, frustration, disappointment, and ultimately students being like, man, this AI just doesn't get it. It doesn't do what I want it to do. And so in this phase, students are going to take their initial prompt and ask the question, is an AI actually capable of adequately answering my prompt? And if not, they might have to go back to phase one and revise it. If students feel satisfied with their prompt, they can consider which AI platforms they want to use. Some students might use the same prompt on multiple platforms and compare and contrast the results. Others might stick to one platform and use it for the entire process. The goal, though, is that we want them to look at the pros and cons of each AI platform to see which one fits their prompts the best. I was recently on an ISTE and an ASCD webinar. It was really cool, where someone named Alyssa Moon, she's a professor, shared an activity where participants had analyzed the personality differences of AI platforms. And it was fascinating to see the work that this other professor, Dr. Gwen A. Tarbox, had done comparing the personalities of ChatGPT, Claude 2.0, Bing, PyAI, just these different AI platforms. And I thought, you know, that's a really good schema to get students thinking about the approach, the tone, the style that chatbots actually do. You know, what are they capable of doing? But what are they like? Like, if this chatbot was a person, what would their personality be? And culturally, we tend to think of AI as both a tool and an assistant. And I tend to skew heavily toward the view that we are using smart algorithms, that these are tools and that there's a danger in humanizing the bots too much and treating them as if they were human. But asking about the personality of a chatbot reminds students that it's a little more complicated. There is this sense of personality attached to it. And so that becomes really important. So again, we started with F, formulating a question. We moved to phase two, A, acquiring the AI tool. And now C is create context. Chatbots tend to struggle with context due to inherent limitations in their natural processing capabilities. Their initial training data that you think about is limited, right? It's essentially, well, it's not limited. It's almost context-free. It's, for lack of a better term, it's essentially everything that they've ever been allowed to process. Like, their context is the world. So chatbots fail to retain a true memory of past interactions, and they don't really understand the immediate context. And really, your individual interaction with ChatGPT is going to be different from someone else. It's essentially being trained on you. And so at times, it can feel a little bit like interacting with someone who is only has memory of interacting with you. And that's a little bit weird, right? Like, it's like talking to someone whose only person they've ever known is you. Complex conversations can confuse chatbots. They might lose track of the conversation thread. They might respond in a manner that's incongruent with the ongoing context. And their dependence on established patterns and pre-programmed responses can hinder adaptability to new contexts, right? Most chatbots don't have up-to-date information. So chatbots are struggling to make inferences. They also don't get emotional context. They don't have empathy. They don't understand sarcasm, humor. All of those things are going to elude the chatbot. So it can feel like you're interacting with a toddler, albeit a toddler with this wildly encyclopedic knowledge of the world. And this is why it helps to give your chatbot a RAFT. Again, another acronym. I'm so sorry, but this is an older acronym. It's about 20 years old almost, and it comes from Carol Santa, Lynn Havens, and Bonnie Valdez in their book Project Chris. And so they talk about role, audience, format, topic. For this, what we can do is we can give the AI chatbot a RAFT. So R, the role would be, what is the role of the chatbot? What are you telling it to do? What is your role? And how will you explain it to the chatbot? And so we're talking about roles in that moment. Audience is, who is the ultimate intended audience of what you're doing, right? So where is this work going to go? And then let the chatbot know the specifics. Explain it in a way that a 12-year-old can understand. So clarify the audience really well for that chatbot. Format, what type of format do you want it to be in? Are you looking for a table, a chart, paragraphs, a bullet point list? Let the chatbot know what format you're looking for. And then tone. While the RAFT uses topic, we change it to tone here. I say we, it's me. I changed it to tone. I don't know why I put in, like, I'm not a member of royalty. It's not the royal we. But what we want it to understand is, what kind of tone are you looking for in the context? Is it formal or informal? Is it simple? Is it complex? Is it approachable or authoritative? Let the chatbot know what to expect. And then what we have as we move on is phase four, type the prompt. After prepping the chatbot with the initial context, type up the prompt from phase one and submit it. This might be a time to do a last revision or rewrite. It might be a time to change your prompt, and that's totally fine. And then phase five is scrutinize the answer. There's often a temptation to take what the chatbot produces at face value. And we know, based on the research that Kartik Hasanagar from the book A Human's Guide to Machine Intelligence did, that people tend to trust AI too much. They view it as more factual, less biased, more objective, and they miss the fact that there will be bias and inaccuracies within the AI. So it's really helpful in this moment to have students analyze the information that they're getting. I want to point out right here that this is where you should reach out to experts in information literacy. I'm a huge fan of reaching out to librarians and to language arts teachers. I'm going to plug a book that I've talked about a lot on this podcast, Developing Digital Detectives, from Jennifer Lagarde and Darren Hudgens. I had Jennifer Lagarde on my podcast a few months ago, and she talked about information literacy in an age of AI, and she's just one of the best thinkers on this. And so is her co-writer, Darren Hudgens. He's a friend of mine that lives here in Oregon, and he's written some great stuff on this topic as well. And so what I love about that is they get into the emotions that you feel as you engage with information, because that creates a filter that you're going to view information through when it comes to AI. But what we can do is we can have students look at a lot of different things. So they might look at the emotional reaction that they have as they scrutinize the information. They might look at the relevance of the information. They might do a check for factual accuracy. They might look at the text construction, you know, is it clear, coherent, readable? They might look at the tone, right? So what is the tone? What is the language involved? And so there's kind of five different domains that they can look at. So that right there is the entire facts cycle. Formulate the prompt, acquire the AI tool, create context, type the prompt, and in the end, you will scrutinize the answer. So those are the facts. At this point, students are going to do a small revision of their answer. They've scrutinized it. If they're using ChatGPT, they might click the regenerate response as they scrutinize it. They might look at the difference between, you know, the first response and the second response. They might take their prompt and go use a different chatbot and just get another perspective. It's almost like having another set of eyes. But they might also ask a follow-up question. That's why I call this a cycle. So the cycle continues. They might take what they have when they're done and put it in the document that they revise, or take the information and use it. There's a lot of different ways that they can go. I will say this, as students work through the cycle, we did this with students at both the middle school and secondary level, they become a lot faster at this. You know, this is going to take a while to engage in the prompt engineering process initially, but it becomes really fast later. And in some cases, it can become too fast. It's hitting a place of automaticity, which is what we want. But if we're not careful, students can go through the process so fast and get impatient with the chatbots. And what we want them to do is learn how to slow down. And so I would argue that that's where this is not just a process, it's a mindset. Ultimately, we want them to develop the mindset of slowing down and interacting with the chatbots in a way that is deeply intentional and creative and curious. So the other piece is, as they develop this mindset, we need to remember that students are going to modify this process and make it their own. They might add a few steps or even change the order up slightly, and that's okay. That's not a bad thing. This isn't meant to be a lockstep protocol or even like a practical heuristic that you use all the time. This is not the same thing as, say, lateral reading, where you really follow this, you know, heuristic lockstep. Instead, the ultimate goal is really to view prompt engineering as both a mindset and a habit, one that students use as they think intentionally and critically and creatively about the way they interact with AI. The more they develop this as a habit and a mindset and a skill, the better they will engage with the different AI platforms in the future. And that's ultimately the goal, is to prepare them for that. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Again, I just want to point out, you can find my book on AI on Amazon. It's The AI Roadmap. I'm going to be sharing more information later about the book club that I'll be launching connected to it. But what I do want to say for now is, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor, if you like it, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify or wherever it is that you listen to your podcast? And also tell a friend about it. One of the best ways to find out about podcasts is just word of mouth. And so maybe tell someone about it. Again, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Have a wonderful day. And go out and make something awesome.